Do usłyszenia. Wir hören uns.
Radio Poland, the external service of Polish Radio. Hi, I'm Sławek Szewc in Warsaw. Welcome to News from Poland on Monday, March the 1st. In a special edition of our Current Affairs magazine to mark the 85th anniversary of Radio Poland, falling today, in which we'll be looking at the station's history and its present day. For over eight decades, interrupted only for the turbulent period of Nazi Third Reich occupation during World War II, the Foreign Language Service of Poland's national public broadcaster supplied listeners worldwide with information on current political and economic developments in this country, as well as Polish culture and history. As experience has repeatedly been showing down these 85 years, programs originating in our Warsaw studios attract not only people of Polish origin, but mainly absolutely foreign audiences, all under a common denominator of interest in things Polish. Though the official launch of what may be termed as Polish Radio's foreign service took place in March 1936, it was already 8 years earlier that the station based in Katowice aired nightly programs for Polish emigrant listeners scattered on all continents. With a bit of luck, the long-wave broadcasts were received even across the Atlantic, as confirmed by incoming letters. These programs, targeting Polish communities, the so-called Polonia, were an invaluable source of information for emigre Poles on what was happening in their homeland, which regained independent statehood only after the First World War in 1918, following over 120 years of foreign partitions and non-existence on the maps of Europe. The outbreak of World War II in September 1939 interrupted the statutory activities of Polish radio, including its external service. Many of its employees went into hiding and took part in the clandestine operations of the underground home army, the AK. Still others managed to flee before the Nazi onslaught from the West and made their way to London, from where they broadcast Polish language programs. Those who fell victim to Soviet annexation from the East tried the same with the Kościuszko station of the 1st Polish Army, advancing towards homeland territory in the final stages of the war. The post-war communist authorities in Poland launched a multi-language program, the project directed under the name Peace Radio, in 1950. In 1957, the Foreign Service, as part of state-operated Polish radio, started sharing the premises at Niepodległość or Independence Street in Warsaw, which remain as the greatly expanded headquarters of the broadcasting company till this very day. In the 1960s, the service employed some 600 people to prepare programs in umpteen languages transmitted in the shortwave spectrum. For example, apart from English, French, or Italian broadcasts, there were also transmissions in Arabic, Hebrew, and Turkish, as well as Scandinavian languages. Chopin's Revolutionary Etude had been the station's sign-on signal in the 1970s.
Tu Polskie Radio Warszawa.
In 1974, an automatic feed of pre-recorded programs was launched, enabling the Warsaw station to air over 60 hours of news and other features daily, broadcast on parallel frequencies. The late 1970s and 80s witnessed a few additions to the shortwave service to include Scandinavian languages and Esperanto, the artificial language devised in 1887 by Ludwig Zamenhof, a Polish-Jewish eye doctor, which won millions of followers and users around the world. In May 1980, the station adopted the name of Radio Polonia and changed its signature tune to follow the notes of the Spinner by Stanisław Moniuszko, the 19th century composer considered to be the father of Polish national opera.
Radio Polonia.
The 1980s, starting with the imposition of martial law at the end of 1981 to suppress the Solidarity movement, until 1989, marking the fall of communist rule in Poland, were the last decade of Western-targeted propaganda aired from Warsaw. The 1990s not only brought a qualitative change in content and political openness, but also a true technical revolution. Shortwave, a classical spectrum for international broadcasters, had been supplemented with global-reach satellite transmissions thanks to cooperation then with the World Radio Network. The Foreign Service prides itself with becoming the first fully digitalized program of Polish radio, which by 1994 had acquired the status of a public broadcaster. Former director Michał Maliszewski noted with satisfaction the growing scope of audiences far and wide.
We have listeners in truly unsuspected places. For instance, while on a visit to the Canadian Senate, I was asked by one of the ladies there to introduce myself, and when I told her I am the director of Radio Polonia, she exclaimed, "Yes, I listened to your station this morning, and I can tell you what made the news headlines." On a different occasion, in the Republic of South Africa, I had an extraordinary meeting with a wonderful dame rather resembling the Queen Mother, who, having learned what my business is, responded joyously, "I listen to Radio Polonia regularly in English." But to avoid the impression that we are only listened to by office staff and elderly ladies, let me add that our programs are equally followed by drivers on Florida highways in the U.S.
Powiem również, że słuchają nas kierowcy w radiu autostradowym na Florydzie.
Sirius, the satellite radio launched in 2002 with primarily the driving folk in mind and available across the United States, also carries Radio Poland programs. In 2006, marking another of the station's round anniversaries, director Andrzej Rybaut, who incidentally returned to our ranks after a break, thus described journalists working in the external service.
Their
work requires special abilities. Not only do these journalists have to know the realities and culture of the country which they describe, but they must be equally aware of the same in countries which their programs in respective languages are addressed to. For instance, the Belarusian section employs a different narration when speaking to members of the Polish community in Belarus, still another when addressing Belarusian society, and an entirely different approach is needed when targeting listeners, let's say, in the Republic of South Africa.
The start of the new millennium also added internet to the gamut of operations, transforming the external service of Polish radio into a fully-fledged multimedia station with its own website, audio on demand, and podcasts, something presently considered an absolute 21st century standard. Again, a new call sign used as of 2007 confirmed that grand transformation.
Polskie Radio dla zagranicy.
Polish Radio External Service. Fresh challenges require change, or as some would put it, sacrifice. In March 2012, we had to say goodbye to many of the community of our shortwave listeners, like Fred Wakeford from the UK, the merited senior among our faithful audience.
Bit down, very depressed to hear your announcement about Polish radio closing down on shortwave. As far as I'm concerned, after nearly 34 years, actually, that I've listened into Poland and made great friendships, and it's going to be very sadly missed.
Shortwave was quickly replaced by digital audio broadcasting at the start of 2014, and Polish radio, including its external service, had become available in DAB+. The public broadcaster was and continues to be the pioneer of this technology in Poland. In 2015, the external service had been renamed to Radio Poland to work with its online partner and brainchild, thenews.pl. Incidentally, the portal had been merited at the time by The Economist in its roundup of English-language news sites in Central and Eastern Europe as the best source to gain first-hand information on Polish-related developments. Radio Poland, the external service of Polish Radio. Continuing our 85th anniversary special from Warsaw, let's move backstage now to take a look at who stands behind the news and features presented daily by the English service of Radio Poland and find out how the program is put together for airtime. Danuta Isler is the English section's editor, the person from whom it all starts and ends in a way. Danusha, how does the typical day unfold, first at the office and then at the studio? And what are the favorite areas of Polish reality you like to explore in your programs?
My typical day at the office starts with me calling Dear All, inviting all my journalists to a morning editorial meeting where we discuss big stories of the day, but also potential human interests that we all look for, like two men who locked a child inside a washing machine recently. So stories that we know our listeners want and will drive our website traffic upwards. I say boring a lot during those meetings and sometimes have to ask my people to put their thinking hats on when I'm not satisfied with their pitches. Quite often, I also say, please enlighten me. I like these morning brainstorming sessions because they remind me this is an exciting job. There are so many interesting stories and people around to report on, and because we have a say on how we actually present them to our listeners. But more than being an editor of the section, however, I like to think of myself as a roving reporter. I have worked in the English section for over 20 years, taking my recorder, first a big heavy box with cassettes, and then a much lighter digital little thing, literally everywhere, both in Poland and abroad, reporting from places like Bangalore, India, or Cairo in Egypt, trains, staircases, various summits, training military grounds, and other unusual places. I still take my recorder on every vacation I go to, and this is probably how half of my Around Poland or Day in the Life features have been created. I have always enjoyed talking, quite often way too fast, or so I'm still told, to anyone who seemed interesting and had some Polish connection, being a Polish descent or interest in Poland. I have also had my share of celebrity interviews, talking to Sting, director Agnieszka Holland, or NBA's Marcin Gortat, among others. I still like to do that, and these days I have a weekly sports show where I talk to both winners and losers, and a business show where I talk about all things related to money, real or virtual. As you can imagine, my typical day at the office never ends, because the news cycle never ends, and neither does my curiosity. Dear All!
Coming, Danusha, coming! Michał Kubicki. He can pride himself as the man with the longest record and journalistic experience among our English section ranks. Michał, when did you start, and what major changes have taken place during the decades you have spent at Radio Poland?
Well, I've been with the English service since the early 70s, and to be quite frank, I myself can't believe it's almost five decades. Now, what has changed is, first of all, is I think the range of topics that we take up in our programs. It's no secret that before Poland became fully democratic and open society, there were some taboo subjects, well, relating to such topics as the history of Poland's relations with what was then Soviet Russia. Now, what has also changed down the years is a growing number of people from all walks of life who are our guests on the air. And I have in mind both English-speaking Poles and foreigners. And this is terribly important because, you know, I strongly believe that it's not so much us, journalists and reporters in Warsaw, who make the radio, but those who comment on current events, those who share their views on Polish affairs and talk about their careers. And among our guests were such great musicians as Yehudi Menuhin and Krzysztof Penderecki. We regularly interview top-ranking politicians, members of parliament, film directors such as Agnieszka Holland and Krzysztof Zanussi, opera stars such as Piotr Beczała, and translators of Polish literature into English such as Antonia Lloyd-Jones. Not only, mind you, the household names, but also NGO workers, doctors, teachers. They are all, I suppose, we can call them ambassadors of Poland. And I hope that we'll be able to have more of them on Radio Poland in the years to come.
You can rest assured. Agnieszka Bielawska is next in line. Agnieszka has been with us for quite a while now, having made her debut at the station in her first year at the university, which back then had been considered something out of the ordinary. How do you recall those times?
I was a very young person at the time, applying for university studies, and it was an adventure, an experience I never dreamt of. Now I know it became a vast part of my life, but then I had to pinch myself every now and again to believe that I was talking to the world. And talk to the world we did, because at that time, the English section had three subsections. There was the English Africa, there was America, a broadcast partly in English and partly in Polish. It was addressed to the so-called Polonia, the Polish community in America. And that was a huge challenge because apart from reading in English, preferably American English, you were also to read in Polish. And even though it may sound that it was easy, the switching from one language to another during the same hour was quite a challenge. I mean, what helped us was the voices then had to take those special training courses in diction and breathing and intonation. They were quite strenuous but proved invaluable. Then there was the English section, where nothing less than the RP or public school accent granted you access to the microphone. Back then, the external service of Polish radio was something like a Tower of Babel, because multiple languages were spoken. There was the French section, also divided into subsections, a German section, Spanish, Italian, Arabic, Swedish, Russian, or the Esperanto section. And in fact, it was not only the languages which mingled, but so did nationalities. Over the years of Polish radio's external service, there were so many native speakers living in Poland who contributed to the making of the broadcasts, the French, Germans, Russians, Italians, and of course a huge group of Britons, Canadians or Irish who were part of the English section.
Indeed, plenty of contributions were made to our programs by very talented foreigners who worked with our station down the decades. Suffice to mention some past names like Barry Clayton, Peter Gentle and Bogdan Żaryń, or Matt Campbell, whom you can presently hear in the weekly Letter from Poland. As an item of interest, Barry Clayton has become literally known worldwide as a voiceover artist, being the famous Count Dracula, and somewhat of a rock celebrity in the iconic, resounding intro to Iron Maiden's superhit, The Number of the Beast.
Woe to you, O earth and sea, For the devil sends the beast with wrath, because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666.
But Barry Clayton's attainments at Polish radio have been equally impressive and admired, if only to mention his radio adaptations of literary classics, like the epic description of the 1410 Battle of Grunwald in the Teutonic Knights, a novel by the Polish Nobel Prize winner Henryk Sienkiewicz.
At sunrise, the armies moved in a body, and behind them an endless train of wagons. After they had marched an hour, the wind went down somewhat so that the flags were unfurled, and then the fields to an immense extent were covered, as it were, with flowers of 100 colors. No eye could embrace the legions or that forest of various banners under which the regiments moved forward. The land of Kraków advanced under a red banner with a white-crowned eagle. And that was the grand banner of the kingdom, the chief standard of all the troops.
Just a sample there of the rich archives of Radio Poland and its English section. Let's move over to Elżbieta Krajewska now. Ella, you have the opinion of the greatest music connoisseur in the English section. What is music to your ears, and how does this love of sounds help you in making a good choice in introducing various genres of Polish music to our audience?
Well, Sławek, this is indeed where you can very often find me. And here's a hint to anyone annoyed when the person next to them in the seats has an enormous bag or a rucksack. There's a good chance they're a reporter. Since I've been with the radio 30 or so years, it's a bit difficult to speak about musical highlights because there have been so many, but it's always an experience and quite exhilarating to be talking to the artists just as they are about to go on stage, getting in the way of the dressers and makeup people, or to the artists just after a performance when they are splendid in their costumes and stage personalities. And it also means a lot of working late. And I can recall one time we got locked in at an opera because everyone had gone or had all the lights in the house switched off during an interview. And there was a time we were all fighting a losing battle with mosquitoes at an outdoor production. And there was frostbite in minus 20 degrees talking to an artist about his, not music, but volunteer work at an animal shelter. It has also meant watching talents develop and meeting many of the lovely, hardworking and dedicated people behind the scenes and enjoying lots of music, from classical to contemporary to jazz, rock and metal. So, shh.
A night at the opera there with Elżbieta Krajewska, one might say. Michał Owczarek, a roaming reporter, presently a bit grounded by the COVID pandemic, but all set to return to fieldwork. Michał, what makes the job attractive to you?
What I really find great about this job is that it keeps you busy all day long and you have no time for your problems. Just look what my typical day is like.
Number, admission.
I generally arrive at the office first, only suspecting what assignments are in store for me. So I start looking up presentable news stories. I can already picture my boss at the editorial meeting say, "Mr. Owczarek, surprise me with something sexy." Let me see what's in store today. Polish GDP down by 3.1% in Q4, according to Finance Ministry.
Nay, nay.
A woman tried to scale Polish peak in shorts and bra. Wow, that's sexy, isn't it?
Hello, chop chop, zapraszam.
Phew, just in time for the editorial meeting. After another 3 hours, I'm done with the piece and it's lunchtime. So I take out my cheese sandwich out of the lunchbox and switch to charge show to be done for the evening. Wow, tastes heavenly. Okay, it's 5 p.m. and let's call it a day. No way. I checked the schedule for tomorrow. The routine news from Poland, please, and Q&A, a tough editing challenge. So, I take my work home.
Hi, Daddy. Nice to see you again. Are we going to play a game?
Yep, I guess so. There's actually a new game called Sound Editing.
No, thanks. I prefer blocks.
So what do you tell a child? Radio is better? Of course it is, but don't say that too loud. Time for Tomasz Ferenc. He is one of the youngest members of the English section team. Tomek, what has attracted you to work here and kept you on the job?
Yes, Sławek, I still am the youngest member of Radio Poland's team, although let me say that I've been working here for over 5 years now. But back to your question, what attracted me to work here at first was the opportunity to test my skills in several different areas of journalism. And I was, because our team is not too big, we really need to be rather versatile as journalists, and we need to be able to do a little bit of everything to work here. And that's what really kept it interesting for all that time. But perhaps the most important, the most interesting thing that happened to me here was that I was given the opportunity to travel with Poland's top officials. And I went as far as Tokyo, Japan, with Polish Prime Minister on one of his official visits. I've covered a NATO summit in London. I've been to Prague, Budapest, Brussels, and even the sunny resort of Dubrovnik in Croatia. And I was able to see up close what high-level political visits look like. And I was able to cooperate with my friends from other media, and that was quite an experience.
Thank you, Tomek. And of course, there's also Eliza Mickiewicz. Eliza is our producer, and you can appreciate her efforts on a daily basis. Though she seldom appears now on the air, our programs would never have been what they are without her support and dedication. Our silent hero, one might say. What is the magnet in your personal adventure with Radio Poland?
Well, my adventure with the English section has started in the 1980s. I have always liked new challenges, so at one point, under the spur of the moment, I decided to change my former 9-to-5 dull office job to something entirely new. After an interview, I was hired as a voice in the American section. And I thought, okay, that's something different. I'll stay for several months. And if it doesn't work out, I'll just move on to find something else more exciting. As it turned out, I couldn't have been more wrong. Before becoming a producer, I presented news, I hosted programs, and even co-authored a series devoted to Poland's ancient capital of Kraków. After a while, I slowly started to discover what many here called the magic of the radio. I know it's hard to explain, but it really just sucks you in. Before computers were introduced in our studios, and that was around the year 2003, all programs were pre-recorded on a magnetic tape. And several minutes before the airtime, we rushed the boxes with the tapes to the emission room, two floors up by stairs. Mind you, elevators were forbidden, just so you wouldn't get stuck in one with the precious tape in your hands. But running up and down the stairs really kept us in shape. In the 1990s, I don't remember the exact date, the English section was the first in the entire program to go on the air live with a one-hour broadcast. Oh, I remember the excitement and the new ideas everybody had. Then we entered the computer age, which was quite challenging for everybody, including our studio staff, sound engineers. We all had to acquire entirely new skills, switch from analog to digital technology, learn to edit sound files, which speeded up the process of preparing the programs,
But still, sometimes we get the impression that computers have a mind of their own. They either hang or freeze at very inconvenient moments, even when we are live on the air. But I hope none of our listeners has ever noticed that.
Yeah, I always wonder, when did it all have time to actually happen? Thanks, Elisa. Well, I hope you have found this brief backstage look with our staff members interesting. Oh, and just for the record, I'm Slavik Chefs, and I've been around this place for over 40 years now. Tune in regularly to Radio Poland to find out more about its anniversary, the station's history, as well as current developments. We've been with audiences worldwide for 85 years now.
This is Radio Poland, broadcasting from Warsaw.
Polish Fusion.
Polski Fusion.
The Polish Palate.
The Polish Quest for Taste. Pierogi.
Pizza.
Kebab.
Molecular Cuisine.
Tales from the Polish Kitchen with...
Agnieszka Bielawska.
Elżbieta Krajewska. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Long forgotten, but ever present. Our once very favorite vegetables for the winter.
Whose favorite?
Us, the two of us. And now we, just like the rest of Poland, seem to have forgotten about them. And today it's the legend behind the Brussels sprouts and chicory.
Mm-hmm. You said a favorite vegetable. I'm sort of thinking almost everyone, if you mention Brussels sprouts or chicory as an addition to a meal, everyone sort of goes, ugh. I really don't know why, but chicory, on the one hand, you always reach for that if you're entertaining because it's so easy to make an elegant fork food or finger food with chicory. And Brussels sprouts, some people only eat at Christmas and not many then. And they're so good and so healthy.
And they're so healthy. I think it's because both Brussels sprouts and chicory were once upon a time, especially during the winter, the only available vegetables apart from beetroots and cabbage. Now we have such a variety, so we score in the chicory leaves, which in fact are not only serve as a wonderful spoon for finger food during parties, but are lovely when you are preparing a salad. And you can also, you can fry them, you can bake them, you can grill them, and you can eat them raw. I don't know why the French still stick to chicory for ages now, and we've sort of like forgotten them, whereas now we have such a huge variety. Some people call it endive, but I think that there is a difference.
Well, I think we have a variety and we have all these packaged salads, which are very easy. And of course, we have tomatoes all the year round nowadays, and that's easy too, and cucumbers. But it used to be so that it was chicory in the wintertime. And it's really nice, even if you just wash it and slice it up and serve it with a dressing made of cream or with a little mayonnaise. We used to eat it far more often in days past. Now it's sort of... It's there, and now we have this fancy red chicory as well, which I think is a form of the Italian version as well. So it is really easy. It's good for you. It's healthy. It's got all that inulin. It's good for your, strangely, it's a salad, which is good for your liver. We still choose other things.
Yes, and I think the same fate met the tiny, beautiful Brussels sprouts, which are in fact beautiful when you look at them. Tiny little cabbages, so cute. This for maybe the reason that word has it that once you boil the Brussels sprouts, you have this odor penetrating through your curtains and carpets and the whole...
Not to mention the flatulence.
And the whole flat, yes, smells of Brussels sprouts. But in fact, as you were saying a couple of minutes ago, if you're frying fish or pork chops, the smell also penetrates. straight, and I don't know why it's, I don't know, less...
That's good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because, and we forget that Brussels sprouts are high in antioxidants, mm-hmm. and they have such a high vitamin content.
Mm-hmm. High in fiber and vitamins and minerals and low in calories. I think the problem with Brussels sprouts is that they're fiddly. I mean, you have to peel them and you have to wash them, and then some sand inevitably stays, and then there's that smell. Of course, in Poland, you used to put the top of a stale loaf of bread a bit into the water, boiling water, and that was supposed to help if you were cooking a cauliflower or Brussels sprouts, but so I don't know what happened to that. But anyway, as I said, they're fiddly, and I think that's part of the problem. And then you don't really know how to dress them. And if you overcook them, they are mushy and not very nice.
Well, but this is your mistake. And when you're speaking fiddly, I mean, when you come to think of artichokes, what can be less fiddly than artichokes? But then they are never scorned. They are topping the list of posh sides or posh vegetables, whereas the poor Brussels sprouts has been...
Definitely not posh.
Yes. But, you know, it is funny because it can be roasted... the Brussels sprout. Of course, it can be boiled, and it has to be boiled, as you say, not to overboil it so it doesn't become mushy. You serve it with all kinds of dressings because you serve them with olive oil and garlic. You serve them just as we used to love them here in Poland, with melted butter and breadcrumbs, just as we eat the cauliflower. You fry them on a pan with a touch of oil, and this also is absolutely divine, with a touch of garlic and some onion, and also with a splash of what's it called? Vinegar, the Italian vinegar, aceto balsamico, which adds to the Brussels sprouts. I mean, you can serve it any way you like it, especially nowadays when you have so many recipes just screaming at you from the web.
Mm. And you can serve them cold as well once you've cooked them and you have some left over. They're very nice in a salad, quite simply as they are. You know, I'm thinking about chicory, and the first thing that does come to my mind is a sort of a salad which is similar to our cucumber salad, miseria, which is a perfect accompaniment with mashed potatoes and your Sunday roast, whether it's a piece of roast chicken or a cutlet or a pork chop, our staple pork chop. That's very, very nice. And then the dressing, the cream or what you have seeps into those mashed potatoes, and that's really, really comfort food then.
Yes, yeah, I mean, and you can really check out all the recipes from the south of Europe, which have so many wonderful ways of serving the chicory. As we said, cooked, fried, I don't know, roasted.
Yeah, braised or just raw.
Or you can even stuff it. Mm-hmm. It's also a very nice, when you come to think of its image, a very nice dish, very representative. The only thing when it comes to Brussels sprouts I do not agree to is the Brussels sprouts are cream soup. It does have no colour, no taste. Yes, it's a waste of Brussels sprouts.
I'm wondering, how on earth can you cream Brussels sprouts? That's very strange.
I see that there is this trick.
And how can it be colourless? I mean, Brussels sprouts, if you cook them right, they're this lovely green.
The thing is, you have to overcook them when you want to make the cream, so that's why they lose the colour.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think we have to wind up there.
And remember about the Brussels sprouts.
And chicory.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You are listening to Radio Poland. I am Michał Kubicki in Warsaw. Hello and welcome to another edition of From the Archives. March the 1st marks the 211th anniversary of the birth of Frédéric Chopin. In fact, the exact date of the composer's birth continues to be the subject for debate. An entry in the record of birth in the parish church of Brochów near Żelazowa Wola, where he was baptized, as well as a birth certificate signed by the composer's parents, give the date of February the 22nd, 1810. In the composer's family home, however, Frédéric's birthday was celebrated on March the 1st, and it is this date that is now universally recognized as the date of Chopin's birth. In From the Archives today, two programs about the composer's life and work. First, a look at what inspired Chopin the composer. Chopin won fame as a child prodigy in Warsaw at the age of seven. In his teens, during his compositional studies at the main school of music with Józef Elsner, he used to spend his summer holidays in the countryside, invited by his friends' parents to their estates. During these holidays, Chopin came into close contact with the folk songs and dances of several regions, notably Mazovia around Warsaw and Kujawy to the northwest of the city. The village of Szafarnia in Kujawy, where Chopin returned several times, proved particularly important in his musical development. Music critic Kacper Miklaszewski.
Chopin, when he was in Szafarnia, met all kinds of music. He played with Jewish band. They simply said that anytime he wants to play with them, he can come and do it. At the same time, he describes the ritual songs on Harvest Festival in early autumn in Szafarnia. So he met all kinds of music. And because of his great musical talent, he made some mixture or some new quality, taking as many as possible features from every of this kind.
The specific flavor and characteristic rhythms of folk tunes were a source of inspiration for Chopin. As Andrzej Sułek, the director of the Chopin Institute in Warsaw, says, it is a mark of his genius that he elevated Polish folk music tradition to the status of high culture.
He was very careful taking some inspiration or some ideas. He very rarely quoted themes from the folklore. We can count maybe two or three such cases in his all his output. He was very individual, and what we could say is a level of inspiration. He was able to combine the folk and the salon, but in a very individual way.
One of these few examples of Chopin's direct quotations of folk motives is the first theme in the Fantasy on Polish Airs. It is based on the well-known folk song Laura and Filon, an ever-popular setting of a poem by Franciszek Karpiński.
Thank you.
Chopin stands out among composers whose music reflects the spirit of their national tradition. His music captures the Polish character so accurately that it is regarded by many people as the epitome of Polish music and even the essence of Polishness. Among his diverse output, the mazurkas seem to constitute its most eloquent manifestation. Kacper Miklaszewski again.
In mazurkas, there are some harmonic or specifically rhythmic and melodic structures which are very unusual and perhaps were not well perceived or understood by his peers. Only now we can, let's say, appreciate what he really did. For instance, in the very early mazurka, B-flat major, opus 7, when it is a harmonic structure which could be very easy explained in classical harmony, because Chopin, Frederick, was very good pupil of Joseph Elsner. However, it gives a fantastic harmony like Bartok. It is purely 20th century sound. And I think that in this case, Chopin wanted to show to some extent that this wildness of real folk music could be transferred into artistic music.
This feature was first broadcast in 2010, the year of Chopin's bicentenary celebrations. In the second part of From the Archives, a report on a priceless collection of Chopin memorabilia, which the Chopin Museum in Warsaw acquired in 2011. A collection of 47 items has been donated by Marek Keller, a Polish art dealer who left Warsaw in 1972 and has lived mostly in Mexico and France since. He describes it as a gift of his heart.
Heart is very important in this kind of business. My heart loves the Chopin's music. I love the music. So when I heard about those very important documents, so I can say that it was my heart who told me, just go and try to help.
And you said that this is also some sort of a debt of gratitude that you repay to Poland. In what sense?
As those very important changes, political changes in this country happened, I was far away. And I felt a little bit sorry that I'm far away. I cannot take a part in those changes actively myself. As I told, there were people fighting on the streets and so. And I was far away in another country's, let's say, working and making money. So really, I felt that I have a kind of debt with my country. And I'm trying to pay it.
Are there any items in this collection which, for you personally, are of particular importance?
Well, of course, the most important are six Chopin's letters to his family, because they are very important, because we know really like a kind of a daily life, very, very normal details. He's talking to his family about his life every day, which is very important. Also about the music. But this kind of, well, I think that the specialists are very, very happy, because really they have new information about his life in Paris, about his contacts, about his friends. I think this is very important. So there are six very important big Chopin's letters. And then, of course, the person who he was giving lessons after his death, she was in contact with his family, taking care of some little things left there in Paris. And so we know much more about his life and about him thanks to those letters, to those documents.
You are referring here to the letters by Jane Sterling, is that right?
Of course, yes. He was in England. He had English pupils who he was giving the music lessons. So even a few years ago, I gave to this institution a letter he wrote from London. First letter was about his trip, that he was very unhappy because the ship was full of smoke and he was always with very delicate health. So, and then later there was a problems with having the piano, the instrument, and so very personal, very, very important documents too.
How important is today's ceremony for you personally?
Well, for me personally, the most important is that those documents, very important for Polish culture, for history of music of this country, and so are here. They were in the United States. So, well, they are back in Poland because they were before the war in Poland. So that they are back in this country, it is very, very important. And in this museum, which really hundreds and thousands of people visiting, so I'm very happy that they are here.
As Marek Keller said, the most important part of the donation are the six letters written by the composer to his family from Paris in the years 1845-48. According to the director of the Chopin Museum, Alicia Knast, this is an invaluable addition to the museum collection.
We feel that there is plenty of things we can still uncover about Chopin just by reading those letters. So if the museum is about unveiling the mystery about composer or bringing him alive, what can be better than his letters and his own words? Can we invent any better means and tools to do so? I don't think so.
The letters offer plenty of information about Chopin's daily occupations and lifestyle.
These letters are mostly about the teaching, the sequences about of last concert. He is commenting the fact that they are well received and they are popular. He is mentioning the price of the ticket and how many seats are sold and that he's actually working on Barcarolle and Sonata G minor. That's the mystery of it, that the official is not detached from the personal, and the passus about the drinking chocolate and his particular taste, meaning unflavored one, plain, is so much Chopin.
The letters will be included in a new edition of Chopin's entire correspondence.
We will be discussing this moment of publication, but definitely because they are late letters of Dick Chopin, they will be a subject of work later on, because that will be probably the fourth volume of the correspondence. The first is already published, so luckily we have now the time to do the research on them. It is really, really difficult process regarding how to put it to the wider public, whether to apply the modern Polish, or just keep, you know, to be really orthodox and keep it as it was written by Chopin, with some spelling mistakes and the kind of idiosyncrasies of his language. That's really question by question. And Professor Hellman, Professor Skovron, and Hanna Bryska-Strauss, they are those people who actually will be debating, and we are going to help.
The letters belonged to Maria and Laura Cichomska, the granddaughters of one of Chopin's sisters. They were last exhibited in 1939 and subsequently went missing. It was in the year 2003 that the Chopin Museum in Warsaw became aware of their existence. Marek Keller bought them from a collector who wished to remain anonymous. Professor Zbigniew Skowron, who has just been mentioned, is a member of the editorial team working on Chopin's letters.
The collection of the Chopin Museum in Poland is one of the biggest collections of the Chopiniana in the world. So every new item is very welcomed because it makes this collection to be completed, simply. Every modern edition of anybody's letter should consider the source. The fact that we have to do with the autograph is a very important thing, because even when this autograph was edited, say 50 years ago, there are always things to be checked. There are some words to be read or simply discovered in the letter, which the former publisher didn't consider. So it is very important to start with the autograph.
The edition of the composer's letters is not an easy task.
We encountered very data in every letter, which concern his concerts, his friends, his everyday life. And the editor should say something about these details in the notes. So then the other kind of work starts, because we have to see the dictionaries, we have to consider other correspondences, other letters, we have to consider the newspapers from the time, for instance, if we have to write something about Chopin's concert. We have to go to the newspaper from the time. And that's the work which is really quite complicated, which goes in many directions, and that kind of work makes the edition quite complicated and quite a big task for a publisher.
Musicologist Zbigniew Skowron ends this feature of the recent gifts for the Chopin Museum in Warsaw. And that's all from the archives. Tune in next week for another journey into the past with Radio Poland's archives. From me, Michał Kubicki, your host, it's goodbye.
English language stream of Radio Poland, the external service of Polish Radio, coming to you from Warsaw. Follow our 24-hour webcast on radiopoland.pl. Listen on the go using the polskieradio.pl mobile app, or in the US also on the toll-free mobile service Audio Now. Select the chosen broadcast by our partner stations, cable networks, and on satellite in Europe, North America, Africa, Asia, and the Pacific. You can also try us on 1386 kHz via Radio Baltic Waves at 14 hours CET. Download Radio Poland podcast from our homepage. Tune in at Stitcher. For more details, check out radiopoland.pl. Stay with us on